gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon. I feel like it's already been a long week. Anybody else feel like that? I feel like it's Monday afternoon, and it's already been a long week for me. We got a lot of news to get into, just absolute chaos and insanity across the board over the weekend. I'm going to have to give up on these attempts on Monday morning to wrap up everything that happened over the weekend. You just got to tune into the InfoWars streams on Saturday and Sunday if you want to find out what's happening then, because it's just too much. It's just too much. On Saturday, there'll be some major event. I'm like, I can't wait for that to happen, you know, to cover that on Monday. And it gets to Monday, I've completely forgot it even happened because there have been 10,000 other things that have happened. Protesters in Minneapolis storming a church for some reason. And again, you know, I've been saying for a long time, we need a sort of new version of the FACE Act, because the FACE Act is that magic by which you transform protest into something criminal because you're actually depriving somebody of a First Amendment right that they have. We don't have to do that anymore. They're just now violating the FACE Act. We don't even need a new one. We just need the original one employed on our behalf rather than being used to throw people who sit down on the ground in front of abortion clinics in jail for 2 years. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 19th of January, 2025. Tomorrow's the year anniversary of the Trump second administration. We'll have to do a roundup review. But here's what we have for you today. Justice Department investigates shameful anti-ICE protest that upended Minnesota church service. The Department of Justice has opened an investigation into the anti-ICE activist who stormed a Baptist church in St. Paul, Minnesota, unleashing chaos during a Sunday service to protest a pastor who allegedly works as a federal immigration agent. Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dillon said the two prosecutors from the Civil Rights Division are headed to Minneapolis to join an FBI team and local prosecutors looking into whether the protest violated federal law, calling it a heinous act. Well, it did, obviously. I mean, if the FACE Act can throw people in jail literally for 2 years for merely sitting in front of a abortion clinic, and that has happened, they didn't even go inside the abortion clinic. These people stormed into a church service and shut it down. That's a violation of the First Amendment, therefore a violation of the FACE Act, therefore a federal crime. And the good news is these people did it on camera with their full faces and then later made a Facebook post where they tagged everybody who participated in. So if there aren't arrests for this within like a day or two, then it's never going to happen. And I think that will be sort of a final signal as to where exactly the American people and our beliefs and our rights stand in the, you know, pyramid of priorities for the Trump administration. Speaking of Trump, Trump cites Nobel Peace Prize snub in latest push for Greenland takeover. President Donald Trump linked his latest push to take control of Greenland to his snubbed Nobel Peace Prize. He wrote a letter to the Prime Minister of Norway, I believe, and basically said, you guys don't want to give me the Peace Prize? I guess war it is. He's like, I love peace, but you guys don't recognize that. So I guess I'll just be the thing you keep saying I am, a warmonger. How do you like that? It's a very bizarre letter. We'll get to it in just a second. Meanwhile, Army readies 1,500 soldiers for possible Minnesota deployment. According to sources, the Pentagon has ordered about 1,500 active duty soldiers to be ready in case of possible deployment to Minnesota, where federal authorities have been conducting massive immigration enforcement operations, two defense officials said Sunday. I think you kind of have to. At this point, I mean, every single one of the local authorities is in bed with, on the side of, allies with the insurrectionist traitors. So, yeah, I think we have a civil war on our hands, folks. Meanwhile, Trump administration discussed offering sanctuary to Jews in the UK. The U.S. is considering granting asylum to British Jews, according to a report published by The Telegraph on Sunday. President Donald Trump's personal lawyer, Robert Garson told the British newspaper he'd been in talks with the State Department about providing sanctuary for Jews fleeing anti-Semitism in the U.K. Garson, who's Jewish and was born in Manchester, says the U.K. no longer a safe place for Jews, and he saw no future for them there. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. Finally, the World Economic Forum's Davos meeting kicks off this week. They say we sit on the precipice of geoeconomic confrontation.
million men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements.
Sometimes we have BOGO Sups.
We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Back, folks. I'm sorry. I actually ran to my office. I forgot there are these short breaks after the first 5 minutes. I was thinking it was our normal break. I thought I had 3 minutes. I walk into the room there, and the crew's like, "Should we play a bound report? Like, where is he?" Sorry. I'm here. But I wanted to get this. So I want to start off with this day. We got a lot of news to get into. But this, I think, is important because the World Economic Forum is starting up once again. And we already know what they're going to talk about. We know what they're going to say. I'm literally out of breath. Sorry, I ran in here. Ran in the last 10 seconds. This is the Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development. It is otherwise known as the Lockstep document, as it is the document that was produced, it was produced in 2015, I believe. I believe it takes place in 2015. It was produced in 2010. But it came about in 2020 because people realized it somehow, seemingly miraculously, predicted everything about COVID. Gee, how'd they do that? And when we looked into this, I thought it was pretty obvious what this really represents. And what it represents is sort of a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C for the world leaders. And they describe basically their plan A, their ideal way things were to go would be, they call clever together, a world in which highly coordinated and successful strategies emerge for addressing both urgent and entrenched worldwide issues. Lockstep would be their plan B. That's what they launched with COVID. A world of tighter top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. But we defeated that. This was Lockstep. That was their one where they basically explained exactly what happened with COVID and how it would be used. And they expected that to basically recapture what they lost by missing their mark on clever together. And you can see here, they judge the results on two axes, adaptive capacity and political and economic alignment. And you can see the higher each one of these are, the better it is, right? Adaptive capacity and political and economic alignment. Now, they actually describe what they mean by these. And in a word, in a simple way to understand this, the globalists want control. It's always about control, 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 control. That's it. That's all they really care about. Everything else they champion is false. And it really is as simple as that. By the way, could they not? I mean, these are the globalists we're talking about. These are the billionaires, the trillionaires, they can't even align. Look at the arrow on the right. It's misaligned. Smart Scramble box is slightly larger than Clever Together. They can't even get this right. I just noticed that. But it's all about control. And so how they're judging things on this axis is the more controlled it is, the more they have the power to influence, the better it is. That's their entire metric. And of course, we talked about this recently. Like, this has become really obvious when they basically dropped climate change because now they know they need AI because at the end of the day, AI is better at controlling people than the climate change agenda. So that's what they go with. It really is. They don't believe in climate change. They don't give a damn. It was useful. Now it's less useful. So they drop it. They don't believe anything. All they care about is power. So by political and economic alignment, they say this. This uncertainty refers to both the amount of economic integration, that is the flow of goods, capital, people, and ideas, as well as the extent to which enduring and effective political structures enable the world to deal with many of the global challenges it faces. So what does global and political, global political and economic alignment mean? Globalism. Countries interconnected in very, you know, sophisticated and powerful ways. That's basically what it means. The more countries are interconnected, the more they depend on each other, the more trade is flowing. And, you know, to one thing, that is good because you're making money. But again, they have all the money. They don't really care about money. To them, it's about control. And to them, the more you have countries depending on other countries, therefore depending on good relations between the countries, depending on, you know, international banks that can facilitate the trade, then it's better if it's like that. Maybe not for the people living there, but certainly for the people who want control over the people living there. So that's one axis. And then the other axis is adaptive capacity. What they mean by that is the ability, capacity to adapt, right? How adaptable an organization or a structure, a government program, whatever it is. They say this uncertainty refers to the capacity at different levels of society to cope with change and adapt effectively. This ability to adapt can mean proactively managing existing systems and structures to ensure their resilience against external forces, as well as the ability to transform those systems and structures when a changed context means they're no longer suitable. So what is that saying? What that is saying is the more centralized control is, the better you can deal with unexpected occurrences. Now, that's not true if you think about it for a little bit. I can think of a lot of ways that, like, a small business could adapt to change in a way that a massive corporation simply can't. So they're not actually accurate in their interpretation, but again, through their minds, and the best way to understand this is through COVID, it was a hell of a lot easier to get Walmart, the massive centralized corporation, to enforce mask mandates and social distancing and all of these pseudo-legal, non-legal, pseudo-health, you know, non-health made-up demands. Those can be enforced through the corporate structure incredibly easily, and you can then have tens of thousands of people all over the country, you know, aligned in their, you know, movement in the way that the powers that be want them to go. Hell of a lot easier to get 10,000 Walmart stores to adhere to the corporate demands than it is to get 10,000 small businesses with independent owners to independently agree to the plan from the government. That's what they mean by adaptive capacity. So in the mindset of the globalists, the more centralized you are, the more interconnected the world is, the better things are. And it really is as simple as that because it's easy to control. Now, again, if a small business, you know, if there's a mess up on an order and suddenly they get twice as many, you know, tennis balls delivered as they thought, it's an easy thing for that store owner to go, well, we're putting them on sale. Well, we have too much. We don't have the shelf space. We're selling them 10 for a dollar. And they can just do that, and nobody can tell them not to do that. Do you think a manager of a Walmart has that type of flexibility, has that type of leeway? Or do you think as soon as something goes wrong, a giant bureaucratic machine has to launch into motion, and it actually makes it a hell of a lot more difficult to actually deal with, you know, unexpected consequences, because you're having to operate this gigantic, you know, robot of the corporation. So again, it's not actually accurate what they mean. What they mean when they say adaptive capacity is actually just, is it centralized? Are the systems centralized in a way that's a pyramid structure? So if we control just a few people at the top, we therefore control tens of thousands of people down at the bottom. And I think this is important to talk about. You know, I did a interview with Matt Forney yesterday that'll air pretty soon. He's going to be in studio tomorrow. And I meant to bring this up with him, so you won't know what I'm talking about, because the interview hasn't come out. But it's just been sticking in my mind and running around up there. Because a lot of the things that we say, we just sort of understand, even if you can't like articulate it, it just kind of makes sense when we say things. To normies, they sound crazy, right? Like, I think I talked about last week, how I said something to my wife about all the things they're doing to Germany. She's like, why are they doing that? I'm like, well, they're trying to destroy the Germans. She's like, why? And I'm like, well, because they will stand up against tyranny. Like, it's like, oh, right, I have to explain this, right? That sounds crazy. Why would anybody want to destroy the Germans? Like, who would want to do that? It sounds crazy. Why would the government hate small businesses? That doesn't make any sense. Don't they love small businesses? Can't they get taxes out of them? Isn't the government good for the people? Don't they want the people to succeed? Right? Again, I know. Trust me, I know what I just said. But it's what normies believe. So we need to explain to them. No, the reason the government doesn't like small businesses is because they can kind of do whatever they want. They aren't controlled by the government, and they aren't controlled by a corporation. They're independent, and it's all about control. Like, in the real, you know, spectrum of, like, good and bad that the globalists, it's literally just it's one axis, and it's control or freedom. And the closer we are to control, the more they like it, the more we move away, the less they like it. It really is as simple as that. And control can be wielded anyway. It doesn't have to be a slave master with a whip, you know, forcing you to do something. Control can also come in the form of, you know, feeding you the sugar that you love until you're so fat you can't even get around without help. Now you're not just controllable, you're, like, incapable of independent action. Control can come in lots of different forms, but that's all they care about. That's all they want. Why am I spending so long on this when there's so much news to get into today? When there's so many, I mean, there's the Miriam Adelson and Pam Bondi talking about anti-Semitism. There's attacks, basically every single streamer who's been to Minnesota, who's not a left-wing socialist radical, has been attacked over the weekend. Jake Lang, all of this. The reason I think it's important to, like, lay this groundwork now and bring it up now, I've been meaning to for a while, because we have fully, and in a very obvious way, once you are aware of it, once I make you aware of this, you'll see it everywhere. We have moved from lockstep to hack attack, okay? We started out with Clever Together. That was where they thought they would seduce us into allowing them to build the globalist control system by voting for Hillary Clinton. We didn't do that. So then they launch Plan B, which is lockstep, where they think that by scaring everybody with a disease and forcing a deadly vaccine on them, they'll be able to basically stop the retreat, right? Clever Together, they were moving forward. They had the momentum. We stopped them. We start pushing back against. They go, well, screw this. Lock them all down. And they really expect, I told you, I mean, Anthony Fauci refers to 2025 as COVID year 5. They genuinely wanted 2020 to be like a hardcore reset where, like, 1,000 years from now, we were counting the years from 2020, like year 2020 was going to be zero of the new age. They failed in that too. Now they're in hack attack. Now they're in Plan C. And as I read hack attack to you, and I've read it before because there are lots of things that have been fulfilled in these predictions, so-called predictions, the scenario planning that they did. But essentially, these are instructions sent out to the New World Order, sent out to the globalists, that are there to, what they say is it's a simulation and it's a big game we play. It's like a tabletop game. We go, well, what would happen if this occurred? Well, what would happen if this occurred, but the government wasn't as strong as it is now? How would this play out? And it's supposed to just be about planning, make people aware of potential occurrences. In reality, what it is, like, that's the disguise. The real message that the people who are meant to read this, not you and I, but what they understand they're being communicated is, here's the plan. Here's the plan, and here's the part you play in the plan. And so they don't need to, you know, when a change occurs, they don't need to get on the horn with everybody and go, okay, here's the new plan. They have it pre-staged. So then when the prerequisites are fulfilled to let you know you're in the new plan, they all already know how to act, how to behave, and how to spend their resources towards the ultimate goal of conquering the world. So they say, so again, this was written in 2010, published in, or, well, it's predicting things about 2015, and it goes to 2030. So it's talking about stuff in a way that's like pretending this stuff happened. It's kind of confusing, but you'll see. It makes reference to events that never actually occurred because it's basically saying, here's a potential path humanity can take where our centralized control network is really under risk of total collapse, and here's how we maintain that control structure, weather this storm to get back to Clever Together later. Hack attack. An economically unstable and shock-prone world. A more dangerous and hateful world. in which governments weaken, criminals thrive, and dangerous innovations emerge. Devastating shocks like September 11th, the Southeast Asian tsunami of 2004, and the 2010 Haiti earthquake had certainly primed the world for sudden disasters, but no one was prepared for a world in which large-scale catastrophes could occur with such breathtaking frequency. The years 2010 to 2020 were dubbed the Doom Decade for good reason. The 2012 Olympic bombing, which killed 13,000, was followed closely by an earthquake in Indonesia. Right, just terror, massacres, volcanoes, hurricanes, everything's, you know, being destroyed. Not surprisingly, this opening series of deadly asynchronous catastrophes, there were more, put enormous pressure on an already overstressed global economy that had entered the decade still in recession. Massive humanitarian relief efforts cost vast sums of money, but the primary sources, from aid agencies to the developed world governments, had run out of funds to offer. Hey, kind of like how USAID is being targeted and shut down. That's kind of interesting. Most nation states could no longer afford their locked-in costs, let alone respond to increased citizens' demands for more security, more healthcare coverage, more secure social programs and services, more infrastructure repair in 2014, when mudslides in Lima buried thousands, only minimal help trickled in. The Economist headline, "Is the planet finally bankrupt?" These dire circumstances forced through trade-offs. In 2015, the U.S. reallocated a large share of its defense spending to domestic concerns, pulling out of Afghanistan, where the resurgent Taliban seized power once again. In Europe, Asia, South America, and Africa, more and more nation states lost control of their public finances, along with the capacity to help their citizens and retain stability and order. Okay, so again, just like how lockstep seemed to mysteriously predict exactly how a flu would be spread and everybody have to lock down. Well, you know, what happened when that plan failed? Almost immediately, the next thing they did was, all right, withdraw from Afghanistan. We're going to, you know, focus on domestic terror here at home. And you have President Trump or President Biden at the time going out and giving the speeches in front of the big red wall going, white supremacy is the biggest threat and this is the terror at home we have to face. I mean, perfectly in line with what Hack Attack says. Are they geniuses? Do they predict this so far out and so therefore, you know, deserve our awe and should be in charge? No, they're the ones who orchestrate this. They're following the script. I'm showing you the script. Okay. Resource scarcities and trade disputes, together with severe economic and climate stresses, pushed many alliances and partnerships to the breaking point. They also sparked proxy wars and low-level conflicts in resource-rich parts of the developing world. Maybe like Venezuela, or all the proxy battles going on in the Middle East, or Ukraine and Russia, for that matter. Nations raised trade barriers in order to protect domestic sectors against imports, and in the face of global food and resource shortages, to reduce exports of agricultural produce and other commodities. By 2016, the global coordination and interconnectedness that had marked the post-Berlin Wall was tenuous at best. So see, they, when they're predicting this, they're just laying out a sort of fake imaginary timeline in which this happens in 2006. They were just 10 years ahead. Which, again, they weren't predicting this was going to happen in 2016. This was just an example script changed 2016 to 2026, and all of this matches, right? It all works. And that's what we're seeing. And again, I'm saying this because right now, the World Economic Forum is meeting in Davos, and this is their agenda. And the title of their talks are basically this exactly. A more fractured world. How to continue philanthropy in a world that's, you know, where international multilateral agreements are collapsing. They're signaling to their people, okay, we are now entering Plan C, the balkanization of the global order. Basically, they see they're under threat, so they're all going, okay, everybody go back to your headquarters, bunker down, you know, reinforce yourself and prepare to weather the storm of populism that's, you know, trying to destroy their system. With government power weakened, order rapidly disintegrating, and safety nets evaporating, violence and crime grew more rampant. Countries with ethnic, religious, or class divisions saw especially sharp spikes in hostility. Naxalite separatists dramatically expanded their guerrilla campaign in East India. Israeli-Palestinian bloodshed escalated. And across Africa, fights over resources erupted along ethnic or tribal lines. Yeah, check, 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 check. I mean, literally. There's a war in, I guess it was Western India. Israeli-Palestinian bloodshed escalated, not exactly hard to predict. And across Africa, fights over resources erupted. Of course, we're seeing it in Somalia and the Sudan and everywhere else. Again, maybe not hard to predict, but I think it's worth noting. Meanwhile, overtaxed military and police forces could do little to stop growing communities of criminals and terrorists from gaining power. Yeah, kind of like the Somali crime rings. Technology-enabled gangs and networked criminal enterprises exploited both the weakness of the states and desperation of individuals. With increasing ease, these global guerrillas moved illicit products through underground channels from poor producer countries and markets to the developed world. It's actually going the other way, but that's fine. So it goes on and on. And basically what it's describing and what it says, and this is like the greatest admission from these people. And I love that they write this stuff. And again, like, they're reading and they all agree with this, so it's not weird to them. Like, it's so weird. We have this love affair with strong central states, but that's not the only possibility. Technology is going to make this even more real for Africa. There is the same cell phone penetration rate in Somalia as in Rwanda. In that respect, Somalia works. But I just love this. We have this love affair with strong central states. It's like, well, no, not all of us. You do. But those of us who don't love central states, you're calling terrorist and trying to imprison or silence. So you can continue to do this because you do love strong central states. Again, this is what they want. Or this is just their mindset that we're getting a glimpse into. Parents, not just a tainted anti-malarial drug. The deaths in resulting scandals sharply affected public confidence in vaccine delivery. Parents, not just in Africa, but elsewhere, began to avoid vaccinating their children. And it wasn't long before infant and child mortality rates rose to levels that hadn't been seen since the 70s. Talk about hackers taking people on. Verifying the authenticity of anything was increasingly difficult. The heroic efforts of several companies and NGOs to create recognized seals of safety and approval proved ineffective. When even those seals were hacked, the positive effects of mobile and internet revolutions were tempered by their increasing fragility as scamming and viruses proliferated, preventing these networks from achieving the reliability to become the backbone of developing economies, a source of trustworthy information for anybody. Again, I think this is a very telling paragraph. The positive effects of the mobile and internet revolutions were tempered by their increasing fragility as scamming and viruses proliferated. So what is that actually telling to the people reading this? Is that internet and cell phones and the ease of access that regular citizens have to mass communication is a danger to them, but it can be defeated by spamming and scamming and interfering in those because they're fragile, right? These are instructions to these people. Yeah, these networks have a powerful potential to get awareness to a large group of people, but they're also easily hackable, easily scammable, easily disruptible. And I was just thinking about it today because for the first time in years, I saw a flat earth post. You guys remember about a year ago when flat earth was the big division? Like, isn't it interesting that it seems like there's always something that's causing division in the right wing? Like, a year ago, it was flat earth. God help us all. Now it's Candace Owens. No more to say, right? It seems like there's always something that's trying to interrupt us and distract us, like a red herring trying to get us off the trail. But it's on purpose because people recognize that these networks have the ability to destroy their system, and so they already have planned out what their system's response is. So I'll finish with this on the other side, and we'll get to the news, but the World Economic Forum is meeting this week, and when I show you what they're talking about, you'll recognize that all of this was pre-planned as late as at least 2010, and I'll tell you what they're telling to their people as to how to deal with this new insecure and destabilized and isolationist world. Now, whether that means that the path that we're going down is like pre-planned and, you know, by doing this stuff we're falling for it, or whether they are helping certain things to be achieved so that other plans come into place, I'll lay it all out for you. Stay tuned. It's the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Share those links.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after The Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. Again, we're just supposed to finish up here just to lay the groundwork. But Davos has started today, the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos under their new leadership, Larry Fink. And this, again, it's a symbol of victory and a glance, a view into the strategy moving forward. They basically, again, their plan is very simple, and we've explained this over and over. I mean, you can go back to probably my favorite quote of all time, probably the most quoted thing I've ever said on this show from Brave New World, or from Aldous Huxley, rather, where he said, you can do everything with your spears except sit on them. In other words, you can conquer people, you can defeat people, but you can't rule people with spears, not comfortably. You have to always be fighting if you rule by fighting. If instead you seduce people into your authority, if you instead entrap them with pleasure and convenience and comfort, then they won't fight back against you. You can sit down and relax as the ruler, because people won't even want to rebel against you. You don't even need a spear to defend yourself. That is it, right? That is like the entirety of the understanding you need when it comes to the powers that be. That is what all of their programs are designed to do, to gain control in a way that is permanent, to gain control in a way they don't have to keep fighting back against rebellion, keep beating down opposition. They want to rule over a constituency that is willful slaves. That's what it's all about. Again, clever together, willful slaves. people agreeing to hand over sovereignty to these international cabals like the Rockefeller Foundation, controlled networks, the World Economic Forum, these others, basically just through a process of electing people who will incrementally cede our sovereignty away while telling everybody in the country that, hey, it might not be good for us, but it's good for the world, and that's what we really are all about. Glazing it with a, you know, facade of compassion and humanitarianism when it's all just control, greed, power at the heart of it. In fact, I have so much to use today, I won't be able to get to it. But maybe I should, since we're talking about this, because a moderator on a subreddit called Livestream Fails, which is a subreddit, it's a forum, people post things, and moderators are janitors, essentially. Basically, they're there to make sure people follow the rules of the subreddit, right? No name calling. If somebody calls a name, the moderator goes in and deletes them. They're functionaries, and that's basically it. But this one mod on the Livestream Fails subreddit supposedly, allegedly, promoted a scam. And so then he was removed from his moderation position. And he made a video that is hilarious. It looks like a skit. Dude looks like a cartoon image of a Reddit moderator. But the reason I'm bringing it up now is because this guy is like, he's like, the reason I became a moderator is because of how much power they have. And it's all about power. And it's just a good illustration. And people have seen this video, you should go out and watch it. But like, that's basically who we're dealing with, is people who just, you know, if they're honest, if they don't have the like social skills to hide that, like this Reddit moderator who does not have social skills, he just comes out and says, he's just like, the power. We have so much power. We get to dictate what's popular and what's not, what people know and what they don't. And it's true. I mean, millions of people visit these Reddit pages on a daily basis. And whether something goes viral on Reddit or not can be the difference between whether a, you know, campaign is successful or fails, whether a property, you know, makes its money back or doesn't get any attention. And so these people revel in that. They aren't making money by being moderators. They aren't like celebrated by anybody. Everybody kind of hates them because they just are basically the hall monitors, but they do it because they get off on the power, because they get to decide. And when people need something, they have to come to them. And it's this mindset of just power lust, basically. And of course, the power lust comes from being a weak, not powerful person. Powerful people don't lust for power. We just have it. These people, the people that run the world, are the Reddit moderators. Oh, Napoleon said that. Well, yeah, it's but basically, yeah, is the underlying philosophy behind everything that Aldous Huxley exposed. Anyway, we'll move on. But this is the key to this, because remember, part of what you have to do to understand the language of the globalists is decode their vocabulary. First thing I ever made for InfoWars, back at the Bilderberg meeting that they used to say didn't exist. Remember they used to say Davos and Bilderberg didn't exist, that you were crazy for saying that it did? Do you remember why? Do you remember why they used to say that? Why would they say that? How is it now that we have this meeting that's totally public, where they publish their minutes, more or less, right? They have a public-facing website that says what the topics of the meetings are going to be. People that go there do so publicly. And yet, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, you can find BBC stories. The Bilderberg conspiracy theory, totally unproven, totally baseless, doesn't exist. No, it existed then and it exists now. Why do they talk about it now, but they didn't talk about it then? Because back then they hadn't lobotomized the world yet, not to the degree they've done now. Back then, you know, in the 90s, you still had a sizable portion of America that recognized what a betrayal it was to have our leaders in corporate, political, religious leaders going to another country to meet in total secrecy with international world leaders to plot the course of the next year. That's totally treason. It is actually a James Bond villain plot. Of course they covered it up back then. If people knew about it back then, they'd be outraged. Somehow, in the intervening 20 years, they've indoctrinated enough Americans that they now can explain what these meetings are, and people think they're good. Yeah, June 2011, Bilderberg mystery. Why do people believe in cabals? And they have a, you know, Masonic symbol, the pyramid with the all-seeing eye, puppet strings, crazy conspiracy stuff, right? 14 years ago. Now they admit it. Because somehow in the intervening time, they've figured out how to trick people into accepting when they say, yeah, the billionaires, the world leaders, the industrial magnates, the royal families, the billionaires and trillionaires and media magnates and, you know, all the most important people in the world from all over the world get together once a year and plot strategy that's then implemented, you know, through their nationwide or international networks. And that's a good thing. And they're doing it because they love you. Now, 14 years ago, people wouldn't have believed that, right? I don't know what happened in the last 14 years. People got dumber. The Bill Gates wearing a pink sweater psyop, was that effective, I guess? I don't know. But somehow, they've convinced people that not only is this happening and it's okay, opposing them is bad. It's crazy. So one of the things you have to understand, sorry, went off on a little rant there, but the Bilderberg meeting, my first report in 2017 as an InfoWars reporter, was decoding the globalist language. At the time, it was all how to deal with the Trump's, you know, the threat of Trump's immigration. And I was in there translating and going, they're saying, you know, where are we going to send lawyers to stop Trump? Yeah, look at this. Was that it? I mean, they just had to wear pink sweaters and suddenly people all thought that it was good that they run the world. How crazy is that? It pretty much is that. Like, although it's not really that, because Klaus Schwab looks and acts like a demon, like a James Bond villain. So, you know, it was so effective that Klaus Schwab can go up there in a freaking, you know, Star Trek outfit. Oh, we are entering the fourth industrial revolution and you will all be uploaded to the cloud and liquidated. And everybody's like, oh, that's so green. We're going to save the earth. Upload me, daddy. Yeah, it's crazy how they've indoctrinated people into this. Don't fall for it, all right? For the love of God, please don't tell me you're one of the people that thinks these scumbags that were just on the screen are the good guys. My God. Sorry, keep getting off track. The word I'm trying to get to, the vocabulary word that you need to understand how the globalists define it, is philanthropy. Philanthropy is the word that they love using. It has a positive connotation. It sounds beneficent. Practically means charity, right? Not really. Philanthropy is what millionaires and billionaires do when they want to spend their money to control segments of the population. They call it philanthropy as they do it. And so these instructions are how philanthropists can deal with these potential scenarios. Now we are fully in hack attack, as we've seen, and they say this. The role of philanthropy in hack attack. Philanthropy is less about affecting change than about promoting stability and addressing basic survival needs. Philanthropic organizations move to support urgent humanitarian efforts at the grassroots level by doing guerrilla philanthropy, by identifying the, quote, hackers and innovators who are catalysts of change in local settings. Yet identifying pro-social entrepreneurs is a challenge because verification is difficult amid so much scamming and deception. The operational model in this world is a, quote, fortress model, in which philanthropic organizations coalesce into strong single unit to combat fraud and lack of trust. Philanthropy's greatest assets are their reputation, brand, legal, financial capacity to ward off threats and attempts at destabilization. They also pursue a less global approach, retreating to doing work in their home countries for a few countries that they know well and perceive as being safe. So this is what's happening. And you're even seeing it with things like the UN, where previously it was sort of unquestionable and absolutely had a supreme position in the globalist construct. And now they're talking about, well, maybe the UN's not so useful. Maybe we need a league of democracies. Instead of being all of the countries in the world, it'll just be a select few number of countries that agree to work together. And then we'll have the BRICS countries. And then we'll have the Belt and Road Initiative that'll tie a bunch of countries into China. And it'll be, you know, sort of disseparate, but working together still. But it won't be under one umbrella organization. That didn't really work, so we're decentralizing and trying to coalesce in various centers of power rather than one centralized area of power. But it's all in pursuit of the same goal. So again, the good news is this is a retreat for them. They didn't want to do this. They don't want to admit that these organizations are failing, that these programs are collapsing. They don't want to admit that their grip on the minds of humanity has slipped. But they're being forced to because they have failed. And that's just the truth. So again, they've replaced Klaus Schwab with Larry Fink almost as, again, a symbol, a signal to everybody else. All right, we're going from the World Economic Forum to clever together. We're all holding hands as we move towards the incinerator to, you know, we're just going to do it with the banks. Again, is it a coincidence that Larry Fink, head of BlackRock, is now in charge of the World Economic Forum at the exact same time that the power of Europe and Canada has been almost uniformly handed over to agents of the banks? Mark Carney, Bank of England, Rothschild Bank, France, and Macron. Frederick Merz was like Goldman Sachs, I'm pretty sure. The banks basically have come out of the shadows. The banks used to, you know, funnel and sort of launder their operations through somebody like Klaus Schwab or Greta Thunberg. Say, oh, no, this is about being happy and saving the earth, and you're not a good person if you don't do this. That didn't really work. We're not falling for it anymore. So they go, ah, screw it. We're in power. We're the bank. We'll just do it. We're just doing it anyway, whether you like it or not. You don't want to come along with us? Fine, we'll make you. I mean, that really is the mindset that they're doing. So finally, we have this. Mounting obstacles to market access. This is technology in hack attack. Mounting obstacles to market access and knowledge creation and sharing slow the pace of technological innovation. Creative repurposing of existing technologies for good and bad is widespread, is counterfeiting an IP theft, lower incentives for original innovation. In a world of trade disputes and resource scarcities, much effort focuses on finding replacements for what is no longer available. Pervasive insecurity means that tools of aggression and protection, virtual as well as corporeal, are in high demand, as are technologies that will allow hedonistic escapes from the stresses of life. Technology trends and applications we might see. Echoing the rise of synthetic chemicals in the 19th century, synthetic biology, often state-funded, will be used to grow resources and foodstuffs that have become scarce. Again, seems beneficent until you understand that they are the ones who are making the resources scarce. They are the ones who, at this moment, tens of thousands of farmers in Europe are protesting because they're deliberately having their profession destroyed. Again, just be aware, when I'm reading this, I'm reading it from one globalist to another who both understand what the subtext and what the real message being shared is, okay? We are decoding their transmissions live. New threats like weaponized biological pathogens and destructive botnets dominate public attention, but enduring technologies like the AK-47 also remain the weapons of choice for global guerrillas. Yeah, you're going to want to use some of those high-tech weapons that we've been developing for the last several decades, but hey, don't forget the good old-fashioned bullet works just as well. The internet is overrun with spam and security threats and becomes strongly associated with illicit activities, especially on dark webs where no government can monitor, identify, or restrict activities. Again, what they're saying is this will be a great excuse for censorship, right? If the internet gets all crazy and starts being this, you know, tool against us, all we have to do is back off a little bit, let it get really crazy, and then step in and go, whoa, somebody has to put a stop to this. Don't worry. We have the ADL on speed dial. And then you can just censor everybody all at once. I'm telling you, folks, you might want to read this and believe that they actually intend to express what they're saying. Just trust me that they all get what this is about. They all understand what's actually going on. They're not fooled. The people that get what's going on are like the billionaires, the trillionaires, the elite in these intelligence organizations and InfoWars and its audience. Like I'm telling you, I've had the privilege of my life to sit at some very high-powered discussions, not because of InfoWars, there's other things that, you know, this is what these people talk about. Do you think billionaires are sitting around talking about the football game? Do you think Larry Fink is talking about what's the latest thing on Netflix? No. They're talking about secret technologies. They're talking about living forever. And they're talking about how to maintain their enormous wealth while allowing the country to collapse around them. This is what they talk about. And this is the way they communicate to each other. Identity verification technologies become a staple in daily life. With some hitches, a database of retina recordings stolen by hackers in 2017 is used to create numerous false identities still at large in the mid-2020s. With the cost of cosmetic surgery dropping, procedures like the lunchtime facelift became routine among emerging middle classes. I bet that sounded crazy in 2010. Not so crazy now. and then have like a narrative of what it might like to live in this time. So anyway, there you go. That's I'm just telling you, that's what we're dealing with here. We have defeated their plan A, Clever Together. We defeated their plan B, Lockstep. They have now launched Hack Attack, in which they plan on letting the world become crazy and chaotic and collapse while they, you know, fortress themselves in citadels, virtual and physical, and weather the storm so that the chaos can be taken advantage of at a later date when things simmer down a little bit. So be aware of that and understand that this is all part of their strategy. And as they make moves that might seem like they are acting defeated, it's a Parthian retreat, a Parthian shot, right? Running away, but actually luring your pursuers into an ambush. I believe that's what's happening. So we have to be aware of that so we can confront and dismantle it. Let's go to Klaus Schwab here, clip 34. I thought we'd seen the last of old Klausy, but he's back. Again, this is the disgraced former president of the World Economic Forum. This is the pathetic Dr. Evil-esque. He's not a supervillain. He's a wannabe supervillain. He had the ambitions to be a supervillain, and he has failed. And so he's taking on a new view of life where he's going to be Dr. Seuss, folks. Klaus Schwab is now trying to present himself as a reimagination of Santa Claus or something. Who would have thought that the, you know, trillionaire World Economic Forum head, whose wealth was built on the back of Jewish slave labor in Nazi slave camps, would suddenly be the hippie telling us we all need to smell the flowers and love one another? Have I told you yet that these people don't believe anything that they say? Have I told you, have I reminded you that these people are literally just actors reading lines that they think will manipulate you effectively, and that's the only consideration that they give to what they say? Let's go to Klaus Schwab here, clip number 34, as he issues a new message the day before the World Economic Forum begins, warning that society is facing a collapse of trust and truth. Let's watch.
Professor Klaus Schwab, you write that our society faces a dramatic but elusive crisis. Can you explain?
We are missing in our society two fundamental pillars. It's truth and it's trust. And without restoring those pillars, we will not be able to solve the big global issues which we face at this moment. It's a keyword of dialogue, of listening each He's to chilling. Another. And in such a way to see the different aspects, the different dimensions of a problem. And that's fundamental in order to be able to create afterwards solutions.
If there is one decisive factor of the intelligent age, what is it?
I think it's the capability, in view of the fast and disruptive technological change, to remain human beings. And as human beings, we have to exercise empathy, we have to listen each to another, and I think we have to analyze issues not just with our brains, but also with our heart, and with an understanding that ultimately we have to serve not ourselves, but society.
I do love it. I do. It's hilarious. That is very funny. I mean, that is straight up. Like, you thought he was like Dr. Evil before? I haven't watched Austin Powers in a while. Isn't there a part where Dr. Evil tries to portray himself? I mean, this is literally Dr. Evil going, we've got to listen to our hearts, folks. We must love one another and listen to each other. And at the end of the day, listen to your heart. Be human. Cut to, we will upload the soul to a database, and I will rule forever, and you will be not but a node in my consciousness. Amazing. I honestly, hilarious. Freaking hilarious. You've got to listen to your heart. Listen to each other. You know who he is? He's freaking the character from Venture Brothers. I need the crew to find me. The doctor with his love bag from Venture Brothers. He's a caricature of, what's his name? We'll find it. Kissinger. Find me Find me the video of the doctor from Venture Brothers, who's a parody of Henry Kissinger. And we're going to play that, because that is what I just witnessed. You've got to believe in yourself. Believe in your own heart. Scum. Wow, they are, I mean, it's, they're really going all out. Now, here was actually what the new president of the World Economic Forum said. Let's go to that WEF video now.
It's a moment of uncertainty, but also possibility. Not a moment to retreat, but a moment to rise. The World Economic Forum is not about responding to current events. It's about orchestrating the right conditions that enable us to move forward. Isn't this moment also when dialogue is not a luxury, but really a necessity? There's no way we can move the world forward without starting to speaking with each other. That's also why we begin this week with music. Music knows no borders. It speaks no single language. A violin, a trumpet, a clarinet, and a drum, they come together in perfect harmony, each unique, each essential, each voice making the whole more beautiful. That is what we must do. Not erase our differences, but celebrate them, amplify them, build from them.
Sounds kind of racist if you ask me. Those are all white instruments. I don't know if you understand this. Clarinet, really? Okay. I would just love to see a symphony piece. They're halfway through, you know, some Mozart sonata. And then the African drums start right in the middle. Yeah, there's such a thing as harmony and disharmony. There's such a thing as working together for a unified goal, even though you are different. You're all playing on the same key and in the same tune. And then there's disharmony, where a bunch of outsiders come in and disrupt something harmonious by injecting a bunch of incompatible noise into the mix. We start this cabal of bankers and technologists and psychopaths by remembering music and heartening to our humanity. Okay, scumbags. How's that going for you? Is anybody believing this? What happened to that trust you were talking about?
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after The Onion said they bought us, we might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.